The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Morning, Glory America. Bonjour. Hi, Canada. Great day for freedom-loving people in America across the West. A day of justice for all victims of Zawahiri, the terrorist mastermind who the United States military and intelligence community took out with a drone strike yesterday on the orders of President Biden. All honor to Biden, as I said last night on Brett Baer and Special Report. I'm glad he pulled the trigger. He's been known not to do so and urged not to do so in the past. The headlines say it all. U.S. says drone strike killed al-Qaeda leader Ayman al-Zawahiri, according to the Wall Street Journal. U.S. kills al-Qaeda leader Ayman al-Zawahiri in drone strike in Kabul. U.S. drone strike kills Ayman al-Zawahiri, top al-Qaeda leader. What Ayman al-Zawahiri's killing means for al-Qaeda. Killed at 71, Ayman al-Zawahiri led a life of secrecy and violence, according to the New York Times. Mark Thiessen, though, points out the obvious, which is that Zawahiri was in downtown Kabul because of Biden's disastrous Afghanistan withdrawal. That may be true, but can we for a moment focus on the fact that this is one evil character and he is dead, and I am happy and you should be too. Cut number one from my appearance with Brett Baer at the top of Special Report last night as the news broke.
Let's bring in syndicated radio host Hugh Hewitt. Hugh, you follow this a lot. This is a big, big deal and a big get for the U.S. and, frankly, for President Biden.
Oh, it is, Brad. It's a huge compliment to President Biden for seeing it through. It's also a compliment to the American intelligence community and the military, which never gives up on a target. This is the sixth of six that they've gone after. Saddam and Zarqawi was killed under President Bush. The American military got those two in the intelligence community. President Obama, of course, famously getting bin Laden. President Trump going after and getting al-Baghdadi of ISIS and Soleimani of Iran, and now Joe Biden, the American military and intelligence community, getting Zawahiri. Zawahiri is, in many respects, the closure that a lot of people have been looking for. He was behind the bombing of the African embassies back in 1998 under President Clinton. And if anyone has read Lawrence Wright's The Looming Tower, they'll know he's a malign, a malignant figure who was as smart as perhaps bin Laden, was not detail-oriented. He was not much of a charismatic leader, but he was relentless. And all hats and all honor to the American military, the intelligence community, and President Biden for okaying the strike.
You know, the politics will factor in here, and this has been arguably a good week for President Biden. He will have his bin Laden moment, if you will, as President Obama did, making that announcement. But it's worth pointing out, obviously, Vice President Biden was against the bin Laden raid. He spoke out recently about hoping that President Trump paid attention to commanders in the Soleimani takedown, that Iranian general. But this is a presidential level decision, one would think.
He has to decide to go in there. And if he misses and kills innocents, Brett, it's a disaster for Joe Biden. So I'm giving him a big thumbs up for this. It's like applauding Nancy Pelosi for going to Taiwan. When they take a bold move like this, it reaffirms America's standing in the world. And every president, Bill Clinton tried to kill bin Laden and missed and took a lot of heat for it. Bush had to face this going after Zarqawi and Saddam never letting up, and Obama did, and Trump did, certainly more with Soleimani than maybe anyone else. That has the most blowback. But Joe Biden, all honor to him. He pulled the trigger, and this is an enemy of the West. It's an enemy of the United States. A lot of American blood on Zawahiri's hands, and there are a lot of Americans celebrating his demise tonight. That's my only take on it, is that thank you, Joe Biden, for pulling the trigger. I'm not sure that I wasn't sure he would. Now, we can begin to factor in, after we meditate a bit on the number of Americans Zawahiri killed, beginning in Tanzania and Kenya with the embassy bombings in 98, through horrific years in Afghanistan, through horrific years when they were operating, through 9/11, of course. He is the mastermind of 9/11. Bin Laden, when you read Lawrence Wright's The Looming Tower, you get the picture of a charismatic mystic who actually couldn't get to the bathroom without help. And Zawahiri, you get the man who was tortured in Egyptian prisons. No excuse for his malignity. He went there as a student of Al-Khattib Milestones and became the jihadist who spread the word and went and converted bin Laden during the Mujahideen days as a doctor ministering to the Mujahideen in Pakistan. Throughout his whole career, he's a surgeon. He was a good doctor. He was not good in the sense of Marcus Welby good, but he was an effective doctor. He cured people. He gained the trust. He started the Muslim Brotherhood's crazy fanatical group in the Egyptian prison where they were all held stupidly by Mubarak after participation in or suspected participation in the assassination of Sadat so long ago. Zawahiri's 71. So he'd been killing people for 50 years. And so he finally gets back. The Taliban drive out America. He gets a nice patio apartment or compound in Kabul, and he thinks he's safe. And so he starts, taking the sun in the afternoon. There's a Times of Israel story about the precision with which the United States focused in and executed on his death. And that is the key thing to me. I came back a little bit later in the show where we were talking about it again. Can we play cut number three? Let's play. I don't know which cut it's in. Cut number two from Brett Baer last night when the roundtable with Molly Hemingway and Josh Kroshauer is going on. Cut number two.
It will certainly tell us a lot more about President Trump's poll. There is a third Eric, by the way. Our friend Henry Gomez in Ohio went and found an Eric McElroy on the ballot, so we're not sure he's out of it. But what Josh said is true. Eric Greitens will lose that. He's radioactive, credibly accused of rapes, persuasively accused of domestic violence against his wife and child. He's plummeted in the polls. Eric Schmidt's a successful AG. So the former president played that down the middle. He's strong with Blake Masters, who's ahead. The Michigan governor's race, he has gone late for not Kevin Rinke, who I thought he was going to go for. So he often throws a curveball for people. But I think at the end of the day, it'll turn out to be something people still covet on the Republican side, a Trump endorsement.
Yeah. So that was, if you're in Missouri today, go vote for Eric Schmidt. All right, go vote for Eric Schmidt. Go vote for Kevin Rinke in Detroit. The Arizona primaries are today. I did not take a position in the Arizona Senate race. It'll be Blake Masters or Mark Brnovich. Masters is ahead, but it's not without a question. Kerry Lake against Robson, and I believe Karen Robson is the better choice. But Kerry Lake and she are neck and neck. Primaries all over the place. Play cut number three for me, would you?
I think it's been a fine 2 weeks, but it's not going to change anything, especially not the Inflation Reduction Act, which is a three-way lie. It's not about inflation. It doesn't reduce anything. It raises taxes and it raises spending. And it's not an act. It's a collapse by Joe Manchin and probably by Kyrsten Sinema. I also want to end, Brett, like you, I've pronounced Zawahiri since 2001 as Zawahiri. We can hold two thoughts. Leaving Afghanistan was a disaster in the way that we did it, and getting Zawahiri is a good thing. They are not mutually exclusive.
That's what I want people to do. You don't have to say, bravo, we got out of Afghanistan, then we got, they're not connected. You can hold two thoughts. As Senator, former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton told me on the show when we were talking about her book, What Happened, you can hold two thoughts. In this case, the two thoughts are, what a disaster, our exit from Afghanistan. We left billions behind in the hands of terrorists, condemned millions of women to an endless darkness and a terrorist hotspot proven by the fact that Zawahiri is in Afghanistan's capital, Kabul, on a patio. All right. So they're not driving the terrorist out. But thought number two, it's a doggone good thing that we killed him. And credit to the president, but especially to the CIA and the American military, which never flags, never gives up. They know those 9/11 victims' families are still out there. They know Zawahiri went after him. They know they blew up the embassies in Kenya and Tanzania. They know that he was behind many other bombings and that he needed to be killed, and he was killed. And so that is an unmitigated good thing. So you can praise Joe Biden and Nancy Pelosi and still say it's a disaster that they're running this country. It's a disaster. I'd rather have the millions of innocent Afghans peacefully living in those parts that we controlled in Afghanistan. I'd rather still have Bagram Air Force Base and Zawahiri running around the hills of Pakistan afraid for his life. But I hope he heard the drone missile as it approached. I hope he said, the Americans. because we never leave. We never give up. Thank you to the CIA targeteers, to the military targeteers, to the intel people, to the folks. Someone flew that drone. Thank you to you. Because Zawahiri dead is Hugh Hewitt happy, and you should be happy on this August 2nd. Live from the studio Winterfell in the far north, I'm Hugh Hewitt. Stay with me. It is primary day. Get out there and vote for Eric Schmidt in Missouri. Welcome back, America. I am Hugh Hewitt. I want to tell you that David M. Drucker has had a lot on his plate because it's primary day. But I got to begin, David, who is with the Washington Examiner. You see him all over TV, by asking your thoughts on the demise of Zawahiri.
Good riddance. I was really pleased to see that.
Succinct.
I think it's good for American national security when we take out these terrorists. I think it sends a message that, because often different political leaders send various messages about how committed we are, that even if it takes us 20 years, in this case, it's 21 years after 9/11, but well over two decades since this menace started killing Americans and killing other innocent people, that we never stop looking for you.
And okay. That's it. The long arm of justice. The evildoers will be gotten no matter when. It could have been three generations from now. We would have gotten Zawahiri if he was alive. Tell me, David, we didn't get Mullah Omar. He's the only one of the seven we didn't get. Tell me, David Drucker, it's primary day. Is Eric Schmidt, who should win in Missouri, is ahead in Missouri. Eric Greitens is disgraced and falling like a rock. Is Eric Schmidt going to win?
Well, I still keep my eye on Vicky Hartzler, even though Trump gave her one of his signature unendorsements. I talked to a lot of people in Missouri over the past few days, Republicans. The only thing they have in common is they want somebody other than Eric Greitens to win. And they all told me that the data they're looking at reflects the public polling that we can see. And they thought the only thing that might have saved Greitens would be a Trump endorsement. And I was checking with some people yesterday when we didn't know which Eric he was going to endorse. We didn't know it was just going to be the generic Eric. And they said, look, even if it's Greitens at this point, it'll be really tough for him. That endorsement really needed to come in by Friday morning. So Schmidt would seem to be in the pole position here, but I'd keep my eye on Hartzler because you never know.
Talk to me about Arizona senator and governor. Dawn Grove is going to be the next attorney general, joins me later, but she's running for AG, not senator or governor.
Well, here's the thing. The polling that we are looking at is a Carrie Lake and Blake Masters victory. And if the polling is correct, then that's what we're going to see. I've talked to people in Arizona who don't disabuse me of that. They've said that it's possible the governor's primary was a little closer than some of the public polling suggested. But even these people, and they didn't want Blake to win, they were giving her the edge. So I think Trump's going to have a very good day in Arizona with his endorsed candidates. It'll be interesting to see how far down the ballot that filters. Obviously, he's endorsed in that race for state legislator, where you've got the Speaker of the Arizona House of Representatives under fire for his testimony before the January 6th committee. So Trump could have some real legs in the Arizona primaries, where the base has always been extremely, extremely, extremely strong in favor of him. So,
I said to Brett Baer last night, a Trump endorsement remains a coveted piece of goods in the Republican primary. And Kevin Reinke is my guy in Michigan. He did not get the Trump endorsement. I can't ever remember the other. Tudor Dixon got the Trump endorsement. I don't know who's going to win up there. And I don't think polling has any idea who's going to win up there either.
Yeah. Arizona's interesting in that Trump and the establishment agree on Dixon, and even though it's been framed in various ways, they're in alignment there. That's, in many respects, who the so-called establishment of Michigan has wanted all along.
What do you mean by establishment? That term is used, I'm often identified as
establishment. That's why I say so-called. I don't like to use the term, but yeah. It is a shorthand for, let's say, the veteran political establishment, longtime operatives, longtime donors, elected officials. I like to joke that Trump is the Republican establishment because he was elected president, which automatically makes you establishment, and yet he continues to run against the establishment.
Yeah, it is it's an interesting thing. I'm part of the establishment because I've been doing this for 30 years, and I've been a Republican
right,
for all 30 years.
Right, and I'm part of the media establishment because I've been doing it for 20. I mean, go figure.
Establishment, I mean, it's sort of like there's Tom Brady and his establishment quarterback.
I totally agree with you. What can I say?
So David, yesterday the Washington Post poll, we have 1 minute. Post polled its pundits. If Trump doesn't run, what's the order of succession? And I put DeSantis, Cruz tied for third, Cotton and Pompeo in fourth place, Tim Scott in fifth place, Rick Scott. What say you to my top five, which is really six?
Yeah, that's I think that is a generally a good order. I mean, we could spend hours breaking it down. You know, I feel like after Trump, it begins DeSantis and then everybody else. But as I often say with campaigns, you cannot assume, and it's human nature to just do this, you cannot assume that where somebody begins with a number is where they're guaranteed to end.
Yeah, check in with Scott Walker on that one. As always, David M. Drucker, thank you. Follow him at Twitter at David M. Drucker and in the page of the Washington Examiner. Come back for hour two. Byron York joins me to talk about Zawahiri's demise and what it means, if anything, for Joe Biden, whether or not the so-called Inflation Reduction Act, to borrow so-called from David Drucker, has got anything to do with inflation reduction or acting. It doesn't. I'll tell you why with Byron York next on the Hugh Hewitt Show. I want to remind you that our sponsor is AndrewandTodd.com. There with Sierra Pacific, they lend you money to refinance your house or buy a home or help your son or daughter become investors in real estate by becoming a non-occupying co-borrower. They help senior citizens with reverse mortgage. They help veterans with no money down mortgages. They help you refinance. So if you need to get money out of your house or you need a whole new house, go to AndrewandTodd.com or call them at 888-1172. Morning, Glory America. Bonjour. Hi, Canada. Hugh Hewitt from Studio North, joined by Byron York of the Washington Examiner, Fox News. Good morning, Byron. The story of the day is Zawahiri is dead and Americans are happy. What's your take on this?
Well, it's a good thing. It's an absolutely a good thing. And it does show that it doesn't matter how much time has passed. As far as September 11th is concerned, we're going to go get people. It's a very good thing. It's kind of bad that it took so long. I mean, it took us 10 years to get bin Laden. But it's a very good thing. But I would bring one thing up. It's still kind of a scandal, in my opinion, that Khalid Sheikh Mohammed lives and is in Guantanamo. I mean, the actual sort of operational architect of September 11th. Is being held and will never be executed. I mean, obviously, he was caught, should have been intensely interrogated, given a speedy trial before a military tribunal, and executed, none of which happened. So I think the United States has put itself through all sorts of contortions in dealing with the people who perpetrated 9/11.
You know, Bill Barr, the former attorney general, writes persuasively on that subject that it's an indictment of our resolve to survive, that he's alive. And I think you point that out. We can hold three thoughts. Last night I told Brett Baer that we can hold two thoughts, that killing Zawahiri is an unmitigated good. The withdrawal from Afghanistan was a terrible disaster. And now I'm going to add a third thought. KSM should not be alive. So you're right. We should hold three thoughts. Byron, let's turn to primary day, because you follow this as well as anybody. Arizona, Michigan, and Missouri. I'm urging people to vote for Eric Schmidt because he's the front runner. He's an attorney general. He's experienced. He'd be a good senator. And we cannot allow Eric Greitens to be nominated if you're a Republican. I know you're not a Republican partisan like I am. But if he is elected, Eric Greitens, we lose that seat because he's a despicable human being.
Yeah. You know, there was an astonishing story in Politico, I think, about what took place on Sunday at Trump's golf course in New Jersey, where they were finishing up this LIV golf tournament. Trump was the host as the owner of the course. And there's this big debate about who to endorse in Missouri, Eric Schmidt or Eric Greitens. And each has his advocates. And Trump is going back and forth and keeps saying, well, heck, they're both named Eric. Maybe I'll just endorse Eric. And then actually had somebody check to make sure that they were both spelled Eric with a C so that it would actually work. This is the level of thought that went into this endorsement. And then Trump does this cutesy, I endorse Eric in the Missouri primary, which is really making a joke of something that's really actually very serious. Because, you know, the Republicans could lose the Senate. Now it's tied 50-50 with operational control for the Democrats because of the vice president. But they could actually lose the Senate. They could lose Pennsylvania. They could lose Georgia. They could lose Missouri. I mean, this could happen. And so we've seen in the past, decade, what happens when you get really bad candidates is you lose. And candidate quality is the most important, more so than ideology or anything, the most important thing in politics and in state level politics. So this is really, really important. I agree with you.
This is a sure loser. And I think Dr. Oz can win. I think Fetterman's such a left-wing nut, and he's very sick. And Dr. Oz is a smart guy, obviously, who's just got carpet bagger issues that I think he's overcoming by working very, very hard like a candidate has to. Selena Zito tells me that. But I also believe Herschel Walker is going to benefit from being called the GOP House Negro by this idiot on MSNBC who called him stupid and a follower. Did you see that clip, Byron?
Well, actually, you know, it was interesting. I didn't know about it until I heard you speaking about it in the previous hour. And so I went and looked at it. Or I heard it actually on you, and I went and looked at it a little further. So I do think Walker benefits from that kind of attack. I don't think he's the best candidate in the world, but I do think he benefits from that sort of thing, which the progressive left cannot stop itself from doing because there's something absolutely enraging about a black Republican who they feel is kind of a traitor to their race or something like that. So I think those attacks are going to continue, and they will help Walker.
You know, yesterday I had Officer Brandon Tatum on, a New Salem host, talking about Larry Elder's second documentary entitled Uncle Tom. This is Uncle Tom, Roman numeral 2, over at salemnow.com. And I think a lot of blacks in America have had it with this stuff, that if you depart from the, I'm just going to call it for shorthand. I got a lot of friends over at MSNBC. I used to love to do Al Sharpton's show because Al's always wrong, and he always gave me time to explain why he was wrong. But we got along fine on air, and Al Sharpton is just left-wing, and he's wrong. And he's been very wrong in the past and things like Tawana Brawley and things like that. But he's not a rude, crude, disparaging, evil commenting. Like, this guy is just, it's just evil to call someone a Negro, a Republican Negro. It is the old Uncle Tom. That's why Larry made Uncle Tom, too, is because I just can't believe how much of it goes on. But of course, I'm not black and I don't have to deal with it. It's rare that we peel back the cover and see this. And I think it must tick off many, many African-Americans.
Well, I think another thing that's probably quite threatening to some of the progressive left is this migration of people of color away from the Democratic Party. We saw that beginning in the Trump years, and we've seen it accelerating, especially with Hispanic voters. And you have to remember that the whole idea, the Rui Teixeira idea of the emerging Democratic majority, was based on two things. Democrats keeping white working class voters, and then adding continued support at very high levels from growing populations of Hispanic Americans. That's how the theory worked. And they're losing on both sides. They're losing among working class white non-college educated American voters, and they're losing among Hispanic voters. And so this is something that's actually incredibly troubling to them. And I think outbursts like what you were talking about are evidence of that.
Byron, I want to close by telling you about the Inflation Reduction Act, which is not about inflation reduces nothing, yeah, but raises taxing and spending. It isn't an act; it's a collapse by Joe Manchin. I've got a column coming out in the Post today saying, look, Republicans, don't do the voter ramming thing. Stick to four things. Increase the budget of the Navy and increase the level of funding for private and public school construction, because public schools are already built and private and secular schools that are sectarian need to get built. And most of all, the key thing, banish divisive education and get rid of divisive education. There's one other thing in the column. I want them to focus and execute so that they can define the fall, because the Votorama is a big waste of time if you vote on 1,000 different things. And if the Republicans focus on four things, Kyrsten Sinema might come along and more Latinos and more African-Americans will migrate their way. Do you think they will use Votorama the right way, or will they blow their opportunity again?
They'll probably blow their opportunity. Listen, this bill is, although that the idea of what Senator Sinema is going to do is the most important question at the moment, assuming that every other Democrat is on board with this and assuming that they're all physically going to get into the Senate chamber.
Yes.
On voting day, you know, Chad Pergram at Fox, who knows everything about Capitol Hill, had had a good series of tweets about this. You know, the Senate does not have remote voting as the House does. And you have to physically get into the chamber to vote. A lot of senators have been sick. A lot of them have had COVID. It may be difficult for Schumer to get his 50 in the room, but it also might be difficult for McConnell to get his 50 in the room.
Yeah, John Cornyn's got COVID, but they could bring him in isolated. Yeah. They could clear the hallway. They can get him in because he's ambulatory.
Well,
Patrick Leahy is the one.
Who,
yeah. Patrick Leahy.
Yeah, he had surgery twice, I think, in June. So it's
remember they rolled Pete Wilson in after an appendicitis. They rolled him in on a gurney to vote.
Well, we may see that just to, quote, fight inflation. And you're absolutely right. The entire sham of the idea of fighting inflation is just particularly breathtaking, even on Capitol Hill.
Yes, by Capitol Hill standards, it's still shockingly disingenuous. Byron York on Twitter at The Washington Examiner on Fox. Thank you, Byron. I'd love talking to Byron on Tuesdays. Go Nowhere America. I'm Hugh. David Drucker and Byron are like batting 3-4 on Tuesday. I love that. Don't go anywhere. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt, joined by United States Senator Pat Toomey of the great state of Pennsylvania. I say that always haltingly because Steelers are located there. Senator Toomey, welcome back.
Hugh, thanks for having me. Good to be with you.
Good to be with you. I want to begin. I want to talk reconciliation primarily with you. But first, your reaction to the killing of Zawahiri after... You know, we've been looking for him since 1998 in the embassy bombing.
Yeah, we have. And obviously, it's very good news for the United States and for the free world generally. This guy was a cold-blooded killer, and his ambition was to kill more Americans. And so disruption around the world. Frankly, I'm pleasantly surprised that we retained the ability to do this in Afghanistan despite our departure. So I think it's very good news.
All right. Now, Senator, I agree. I think we can also hold two thoughts that the Afghan withdrawal was a debacle and it is very good news. Those are
absolutely
not contradictory.
Correct.
Senator, let's turn to the so-called Inflation Reduction Act, which is not about inflation, reduces nothing. It raises taxes and spending and isn't an action. It's actually a retreat and a collapse by Senator Manchin. What do you make of this monster?
It's a total disaster. And, you know, I got to tell you, I'm very friendly with Joe Manchin. I like Joe. I've worked with Joe. He's a good guy. But I really feel like he's been taken to the cleaners here. I mean, you look at this. We've got this big tax increase, which is going to do a lot of damage. I'd be happy to talk a little bit more about the details there. They're going to put price controls on prescription drugs and, you know, really impede innovation for new life-saving medicines. And we're going to take that money and we're going to use it for corporate welfare for green energy and subsidies for affluent Americans to buy Obamacare. It's going to do nothing to improve our deficit. It's going to make inflation worse. It's going to make our economy weaker. In return for all this, Joe gets a promise of permitting reform, which, by the way, we were supposed to have done that in the infrastructure bill. But now we're really going to do it, apparently. But we haven't seen any text. We haven't seen the language. And I sure haven't seen the 10 Democrats that are signed up to vote with Joe on that. So this just looks like a terrible combination to me, Hugh.
Yeah, I have no MRI into his motivations. I'm just hoping that those motivations do not move Senator Sinema away from common sense. I hope, in fact, this pushes her towards converting her party identification, because the left wing's still going to go after her in a primary, but she could be the Republican nominee. Have you talked to her yet about this? Because she's the only one that stands between America and this nightmare. And it's really a nightmare. Can I pause for a moment? I was a CHIPS Act supporter, but we just gave the semiconductor industry, for strategic reasons, a whole billions of dollars, and we're going to take it back with the other hand. It's absolutely insane.
Well, on the tax side, I think one of the most constructive elements we had was the provision in our corporate code that allowed the full expensing of capital expenditures in the year in which the expense occurred. So if you make $1 billion and you plow all of that back into your business, expanding your plant, buying new equipment, all so that you can expand capacity, hire more workers, you know, under financial accounting rules, you can only deduct a small portion of that in the year in which you incur that cost, and the rest in little slices over many years to come. And we said, no, you actually laid out the cash now. You should be able to take the deduction now. You won't be able to also take deductions in the future on it, but take it now. The net effect of that, Hugh, is we lowered the cost of making capital expenditures. We saw a rise in capital expenditures. That's how you get productivity growth. That's why pre-COVID we had strong wage growth. Wages were growing faster than inflation, not the other way around like we have today. And that, right, this really constructive element, that's what they're blowing up. This is mostly a tax increase on manufacturers who invest in their business. That's most.
And they will pass it on if they survive. They will pass it on to the people who buy their products.
Well, it'll be some combination of higher prices to consumers, lower compensation to their employees, and simply less growth. They'll be able to do less of the capital expenditures that is the source of growth. So at every level that you look at this, it's terrible policy. By the way, corporate tax revenue is at a record high, at a unusually well above average high as a percentage of our income. It's not as though corporations aren't paying taxes. It's just maddening.
Have you talked to Senator Sinema yet?
Not about this provision. No, not about this. Okay. And so I'm not sure where she is. She has been conspicuously silent. I do intend to
hold her. I saw your colleague, Senator Blunt, not long ago. I didn't have a chance. This had not happened, or I would have advised him to get the conference together and agree on a strategy for reconciliation. I hate Votorama. I think it's an old tactic to, you know, put forward 100,000 amendments and get symbolic votes that no one pays attention to. I think the new tactics would be to zone in on three or four amendments that matter. And my suggestions, they'll be in the post today, is funding the Navy Undersea Service with real money that's lockboxed away, and to enforce cuts on federal funding for schools if they're teaching divisive subjects K-8, and to fund private public school construction of charter schools, and then finally to fund nuclear power plants of the new generation, the kind Bill Gates supports and I support, and then just make that the GOP agenda and dare Democrats to vote against 4 70-30 issues and then try and strip them out at the end. Do you think there's a chance of getting the Republican conference to focus and execute on Votorama?
Well, this has been the topic of conversation every day at our lunches now, and there are a lot of competing ideas. I think the ideas you've laid out are very worthy of consideration. I can tell you there are some other good ideas as well. I don't think this is going to be the usual Votorama, which I agree with you, have been 90-something percent waste of time. I think this is going to be a little more constructive, but we're not there yet in terms of having an agreed upon strategy. And as you might imagine, it's a little challenging to get 50 senators to agree to much of anything. So, but we are working on it every day.
I want to explain to people and then have you confirm and expand on if the Democrats get Sinema, they introduce a reconciliation bill. They got the 50 votes plus the vice president goes on the floor. Votorama allows all sorts of amendments, which have usually been symbolic, and they vote yes, no, yes, no, yes, no, and people vote against gun control, for gun control. They go through all sorts of things, for abortion rights, against abortion rights. At the end, a wraparound amendment comes back to restore the original bill with those amendments that Democrats insist on having. Have I described it accurately, Senator?
Except I think there's one slight nuance that you left out. I know you know this, but I would just spell it out as clear as I can. The wraparound bill at the end, the main purpose it serves is to strip out all amendments that passed. Be- because the Democrats don't want any amendments that pass. You probably intended to.
I did. I intend to force them to make the wraparound amendment include by purposes of focusing the Republican. I mean, if you guys explain it at the beginning, say we're only going for three or four amendments and we want them in the wraparound amendment. You've got to explain that to the country so they know that's really the agenda.
Well, and what we've got to do is expose the hypocrisy of anybody that votes for the amendment when it is offered and then votes to strip it out in the wraparound amendment to make it go away. I mean, you can't have it both ways.
Yeah. Maggie Hassan, Raphael Warnick, Mark Kelly, all of the Democrats who say they are for green energy, if they don't vote for nuclear power plant, they're not really for a serious climate change agenda.
Just because it's the only reliable source of zero CO2 energy.
Yeah, and they're much, and you're from Pennsylvania, Three Mile Island, right?
Yeah.
Maybe the hardest place in the world to build a new nuclear plant would be Pennsylvania, but these are fifth generation reactors. They're very safe.
Totally. No, there's no question about it. And they're so reliable and they can handle the base load at 24/7, 365. There's no question about it.
So, Senator, I want to switch to politics. Can Dr. Oz win the Keystone State?
He certainly can. No question about it. Dr. Oz is actually quite a good candidate. He's a very smart guy, very accomplished guy, very successful in multiple careers. And he has the humility, despite that success, to recognize that, you know, he's learning his way through this process. This is his first run for political office. John Fetterman is so far out of the mainstream of America or Pennsylvania. I mean, maybe he could run in Vermont, but he's a Bernie Sanders socialist Democrat advocating Medicare for all and all kinds of, you know, everything in the Green New Deal. He's as far left as they come in the Democratic spectrum. And that's not where Pennsylvania is. So I think we should have expected. I did expect that Oz would be behind initially after the primary. He had $20 million of attack ads spent against him and John Fetterman had none. So sure, that did some damage, but most of that is damage done to Republicans. That was the targeted audience. And Republicans are going to come home to Oz. There are no Republicans are going to vote for John Fetterman. And as Republicans come home to Oz, we're going to see this race tighten right up. Fetterman, as you probably know, is unable to campaign. I think that is going to be a problem for him at some point, probably soon. And I think we win in a close race, in part because Oz is a very good candidate, in part because we're in a good environment.
Yeah, I'm on in Pennsylvania from Scranton to Pittsburgh, all over the state, and I will be hammering on John Fetterman. He makes Bernie Sanders look serious.
Yeah,
and that is all I need to say about it. Now, Senator Toomey, I got to ask you. Years ago, when Rick Santorum was running for re-election his last campaign that he lost, I had urged him. I wish you don't run for re-election; just run for president. He did that years later, and upset in Iowa. He won Iowa, beat Mitt Romney in Iowa.
Right.
Is Pat Toomey thinking about running for president at all?
No, not at all. I can assure you of that, Hugh. No, I think this is the end of politics for me. I've been so grateful and fortunate to have this chance to serve Pennsylvania. But it'll be 12 years in the Senate. I had served 6 years prior to that in the House, 18 years in public office. That's enough for me. I've always been a believer in term limits and turning things over. I always figured I'd serve probably two terms. I've been fortunate enough to do that. I'll be moving on to the private sector. I don't know what that looks like yet, Hugh, but I've got 5 more months here. I'm going to run through the tape, accomplish everything I can, and then I'll figure out what's next for me.
Senator, you and Rob Portman are two of our workhorses. I mean, you are two of the guys that get stuff done. Who's going to step up and take that job? And by that job, I don't mean a particular ideological approach. I mean a particular Senate approach, which is you're not out there bashing and crashing. You're out there trying to get legislation written and passed.
You know, there's a lot of guys that are going to that have actually a good track record in that regard and will continue. You know, I think of Dan Sullivan from Alaska as a real workhorse, a really smart guy who's just
Shelley Moore Capito, Susan Collins.
Shelley's terrific. Susan is one of the best senators. She and I disagree on many substantive policies, but she's a terrific lady, works so hard, finds common ground. She'll be getting things done. Tim Scott, I think, you know, everybody loves Tim, and it does matter if people like working with you and people like working with Tim Scott. And he'll be a very productive guy. He'll take over as chairman of the Senate Banking Committee if we're in the majority. So I think we'll see a lot of folks on the stage getting some really good things done.
Last quick question. Do you have any preferences for the 2024 nominee for the party for which you've devoted a lot of your adult life?
I haven't made a pick of who I'm for, Hugh. I'm going to watch this emerge. I do think we will have a competitive primary, whether or not Donald Trump decides to run for re-election. I don't know what he'll do. I'll be watching to see, I've got some colleagues who are eyeing it, as you know very well. Of course, there are governors who are looking at this. So I think we'll have some candidates to choose from, but I'm going to wait and see what that looks like.
Last quick, will you be out on the campaign trail with Dr. Oz?
If he wants me to, I will.
He's got an open invitation here because we got to win that state. Pat Toomey, thank you. Keep coming back, even when you're in the private sector like Rick has. I appreciate your service, and thank you for joining me this morning.
Thanks for having me, Hugh.
Such a workhorse. Pat Toomey is such a workhorse. He's gotten so much done. People do not know how much Pat Toomey has gotten done. A really remarkable guy. Good morning, Glory America. Bonjour. Hi, Canada. And greetings to everyone in Maine, especially. Bring back Bruce signs. They're all over down east and the northern part of Maine. The new Maine 2nd Congressional District wants Bruce Poliquin back in Congress. He joins me now. Good morning, Bruce. How are you?
Good morning, Hugh. Great to be in the show. Appreciate it. Thanks for the
Well, I'm glad to be here. Whenever I drive through WGAN land, where I'm carried 9 to noon in Portland, people are talking mostly about Portland politics. They never talk much about most of Maine, which is Maine's 2nd Congressional District, which you're running to represent again. Tell us about it.
Well, we have two congressional districts, Hugh, in the state. The first district is a little strip along the coast. From Camden down to Kittery. It has half the state's population, but only about 10% of the landmass. I represented, and hopefully will again, 90% of the landmass and half the state's population in the 2nd congressional district. It includes central Maine, western Maine, down east Maine from Lincolnville all the way to Eastport until you hit the Canadian border, and then all of northern Maine. We have about a 600-mile border with Canada. They're wonderful people, hardworking, honest. It's cold up there, Hugh, and our folks are very frightened about going into this winter with the paying for groceries and heating oil and gasoline and their electric bills. 75% of our homes, Hugh, in our 2nd district, really throughout our state, rely on heating oil, the largest percentage in any state in the country. And a couple of years ago, heating oil was $2 a gallon. It's now approaching $6 a gallon. So if you used to spend $1,000 to heat your home, it's now going to cost about $3,000, and it's crushing our family budgets.
You know, Bruce, it's killing the economy in Maine as well. We spend our summers here in fall, early fall, because there's no better place in America than Maine in the summer. That's why it's called vacation land. And I vote in Virginia. I'm a Virginia resident. But I'm really hoping you bring balance back because Maine doesn't have a voice in the House of Representatives right now.
That's right. I was the last Republican in New England, actually, in the House of Representatives. I won in 2014, Hugh, the first Republican in 20 years to win our seat. I won again by a larger margin in 16. And then in 18, we got the most votes on Election Day, but because of ranked voting. It was awarded to the fellow that came in second place. But we have a plan to deal with it this time. I didn't run last cycle because mom and dad were in their 90s. But this is a very good cycle for me to run this time. I've come out of semi-retirement. I'm a business guy. And I'm doing this because our country and our state's in trouble, and I want to help.
Now, Bruce, in Maine, it's not a dirty word to say you went to Harvard. So did I. But I'm class of 78. You're class of 76. It doesn't matter. There's so many people around here that went to Bowdoin and Colby and Harvard. It doesn't matter. Which house were you in? I'm a Winthrop guy.
Yeah, I was in Quincy House. But, you know, you're 2 years behind me, Hugh.
Yeah, my brother was in Quincy House that year. So you two must have sat at the same table a few times. So tell me, in terms of what matters most to Maine, obviously the cost of heating your house is going to matter most. But when we were getting some repairs done, lumber went. I mean, everything went through the roof up here.
Yeah. Well, this is what happens, of course, when you spend trillions and trillions of dollars down in Washington that's either borrowed or printed. We don't have this money, as we know. It's all printed. And that, of course, drives up inflation, the cost of everything. You know what's really sad, Hugh, is that the Biden administration and the Democrats who control everything in Washington, the White House, the Senate, and Congress, when they came into power, they inherited a very strong recovery coming out of our pandemic. And in less than 2 years, they put us in a recession. And now, of course, You know, the Fed's raising interest rates, which is going to make the recession worse. And it's causing, home mortgage rates and everything else to go up. So it's really hurting the little guy. I'll tell you my fix for this, having spent 40 years in the business community dealing with the real world economy every day, my fix for this, along with anybody who wants to join me, Republicans, Democrats, independents, I couldn't care less. Stop this crazy spending that's driving up inflation. Stop these tax increases, which are crazy, to push higher taxes when you're going into when we're in a recession. Repeal this red tape that's smothering our economy. Reopen our energy sector. My gosh, reopen our pipelines and our ability to produce more supplies of gasoline and diesel and heating oil, which will drive down prices, and then secure our border queue. We are getting crushed by fentanyl up here, 90% of which comes over our southwest border.
Now, Bruce Polquin, you also have a Democratic opponent who's about to vote for the so-called Inflation Reduction Act if it gets out of the Senate. And I'm praying Senator Sinema blocks it. But if it doesn't, it goes to the House and your opponent will vote for it. It has got nothing to do with inflation, nothing to do with reductions of anything. It's a high tax, high spend bill. And it's not an act that's a collapse by Joe Manchin. Will your opponent vote for it?
I don't know, but I do know this, Hugh, is that Jared Golden, my opponent, tries to sell himself as a moderate. Same way Joe Biden fooled enough people to become president, trying to convince people he was a moderate. He's not, and he's very extreme in his positions. Jared Golden votes more than 80% of the time with AOC, Joe Biden, and Nancy Pelosi. He is not a moderate. He is enabling all of this to happen. So what I know is that all of these problems that we have are going to continue unless we make a change in Washington. And, you know, elections are all about choices, right? I offer a real clear choice versus my opponent. If you
now, Bruce, I got to ask you, I used to broadcast out of California when I did West Coast Afternoon Drive. And Riverside, Ken Calvert, your old colleague from the House, he had like maybe the biggest district I've ever seen. But when I look at your district, you probably have the most roads to travel to cover your district. I mean, it's just vast, and a lot of it's forest. How do you get around?
Well, you get around. I have a Jeep, and I keep it as full of gas as I can, and the tires are good. But you're right. It's an eight-hour drive from Freiburg to Madawaska. It's the largest congressional district east of the Mississippi River. It's highly rural, and it is hard work. The people of Maine expect to see you. I'm a Central Mainer. Three generations Central Maine. I love our state. I love our country, but we are in deep trouble and it is hard work. I'm working my tail off. I'll tell you, I probably shouldn't tell you, but I'm going to anyway, you, because you're a Harvard guy. When I was in Congress, I didn't want to become part of the swamp down there. It's just not who I am. So I slept in my office for 4 years on a Murphy bed that I bought, and I came back on the weekends, but I did that for a reason. Is to show to the people of Maine that it's, for me, it's all about work. And when I come back to the district on the weekends, I travel nonstop. It is the least glamorous job in America, but we got to do it. If we don't make a change, all these problems get worse, and I'm committed to winning this again.
Now, the National Republican Congressional Committee identifies races that they can flip. I think yours is identified. I think you know all those guys on the NRCC, all those gals who are running the money operation. But you still got to make small dollar donation. You have an imminently winnable, despite the crazy ranked voting stuff up here. And I've never understood why people adopt that. It's a nutty thing. It's like open primaries. It destroys accountability and certainty. Have you figured it out? Do you know how to make it work now? I mean, does Maine act? Do Mainers know how to make it work?
Yeah, they do. Last time this was used, the first time it was used in a federal race, I was the guinea pig in 2018. In any other state in the country, I would have, would have come out on top, but it is what it is. But here's the issue, is that there were 35,000 Republicans who did not vote in 2018. And their number one reason was confusion over ranked voting. We're now getting the message out to our voters. They know what it is. Don't be intimidated. Go vote. Just circle in the box for Bruce Poliquin. If you want to put me first, second, and third choice, go ahead. Vote for Bruce Poliquin. Put it in the box, and then you're done. So there's no reason to be intimidated. Go vote for Bruce Poliquin. Put it in the box. You're done. No problem.
I love Bring Bruce Back. And I know it's a festival summer. Like, I probably will run into you at the Blueberry Festival. I'll drive down to the Blueberry Festival and see you there. But in terms of how you campaign, I mean, in a rural district, you got to find 10 people and talk to them. How do you find those 10 people on any given day? Because Maine is really spread out.
It is. When, you know, we go to fairs, and we don't really go in and eat French fries. We stay where people go through the gate, you know, and we shake hands with everybody and say hello and talk to folks. We go to football games and soccer games in the fall. We go to parades. We go to the Marxie Day Parade, the Bangor Parade, and I'm walking back and forth on either side of the road shaking hands with everybody.
How do you get out to the islands? I mean, just as a tactical issue, you got to get a ferry every day, right?
Well, we're pretty good about meeting people on the mainland. I go down to the docks and meet with the lobster fishermen who are really concerned about this Green New Deal. Taking away their fishing grounds and they're threatening their way of life. So we just got to work it. We go to diners. We go to truck stops, the whole thing.
Bruce Polquin, keep up the good work. Bring Bruce back. I just tweeted out his website. It's polquinforcongress.com, polquinforcongress.com. Thank you, Bruce. I'll be right back, America. The Hugh Hewitt Show rolls on. My WGAN listeners on 98.5 and 560, get out and give some money to Bruce Polquin. I'll be right back. Welcome back, America. Senator Tom Cotton is my guest. Good morning, Senator. How are you?
I'm doing very well, Hugh. It's good to be back on with you.
I was surprised to learn that Asa Hutchinson, your governor of the great state of Arkansas, is running for president. I came out of nowhere. I did not know that.
Well, Hugh, it's only August of the midterm election year, so I think it's a little early for anyone to be thinking seriously about running for president when we have a critical election in front of us. I'm reminded of my old drill sergeant who during basic rifle marksmanship used to remind us to focus on the 25-meter target. You got 300-meter targets out there, but the 25-meter target is the one right in front of you and the one most urgent. And that 25-meter target is the midterm election. We're going to win back the Congress and win back the Senate. Got a lot of important primaries tonight that will produce a lot of Republicans who are going to be the next senators from states that we're going to win this fall. So that's where I'm going to keep my focus on, and we'll deal with future elections in the future.
All right, Senator Cotton, yesterday a racist on MSNBC or the day before attacked Herschel Walker as being the kind of Negro, I'm using his words, that Republicans like who takes orders. And that kind of racist dirt, Herschel answered with a very kind and generous response. You know Georgia very well. You know the South very well. Does that stuff fly anymore, that Uncle Tom nonsense and actually vindictive, mean, evil stuff from MSNBC's crazier left wing?
No, Hugh, it does not, except in urban liberal provinces like MSNBC and fancy, prestigious universities and corporate boardrooms where they obsess about race all the time. And they do, in fact, count by race and discriminate based on race. And some of the people who face the toughest and most prejudicial treatment are racial minorities who dare to break from the liberal orthodoxy. You see that with Clarence Thomas, for instance. You've seen it with Tim Scott. Now you're seeing it with Herschel Walker. I'm not surprised that he responded in a magnanimous and gracious way because he's a magnanimous and gracious man. And that's why he's going to beat Raphael Warnock. He's going to help us stop the Biden agenda. That's probably going to generate more of these insane attacks against him. But I know that he's got what it takes to see it through to the end.
Okay, Senator, I just wanted to give that chance. Now let's turn to reconciliation, to the poorly named Inflation Reduction Act, which is not about inflation, reduces nothing. It actually raises taxes and spending and isn't an action. It's a retreat by Senator Manchin, a collapse, actually. If you get Senator Sinema, if they get Senator Sinema to go along, or if you get Senator Sinema to become a Republican or stop this nonsense, nightmare, actually, it'll fail. But if it doesn't, goes to Votorama. Senator Toomey and I discussed Votorama is a largely symbolic exercise that I'd like to see the Republicans turn into a statement of core key issues with 3, 4, 5 amendments at most that focuses the mind on spending for the Navy underwater in the Pacific, on education, getting rid of divisive issues K-8, and building charter schools, both public and private. And then finally, building nuclear power plants. I think those would all pass the parliamentarian birdbath. What do you think is going to happen what amendments would you like to see the GOP focus on?
Hugh, before we get to the Voterama, just let me say, only Joe Biden and liberal Democrats could say that taxing and spending hundreds of billions of dollars more when inflation is at record high and the country just entered a recession is a good idea. I'm not sure why Joe Manchin flip-flopped on his position. I haven't had a chance to talk to him about it, but the 700-page bill was probably the longest suicide note in the history of West Virginia. And it's going to do nothing to help the Democrats this fall because the American people know that higher taxes and a recession and more spending with record high inflation is insanity. Now, on the amendment process, well, first off, I think you have to wait until Senator Sinema announces whether she supports the bill as written or wants it amended. And then second, if she does want amendments, I would strongly believe that we need to work with her to try to change the bill to the greatest extent possible. And you outlined some of the possibilities there. There are some procedural niceties we have to go through, but some of the core provisions of the bill, I think you highlighted that we could probably get her vote on, and we would then see if whether the far left progressives like Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren and the squad over in the House of Representatives want to vote for a bill that's been changed substantially with the votes of 50 Republicans and Senator Sinema, and maybe a few of those Republicans or a few of those Democrats who are going to have to face the music 14 weeks from tonight.
We'll change our mind. Senator, let's go to the easiest one. You're not really serious about climate change. You're not really green unless you're pro-nuclear power, as Bill Gates, of all people, has now argued. Safe, effective fifth-generation nuclear plants are not a part of this bill. So it's not a serious effort to stop global warming. It's not a serious effort to reduce CO2.
Yeah. For decades, green climate activists have opposed nuclear energy for no good reason. And there's even less good reason now, given that the latest advances in nuclear technology make nuclear reactors easier to build, safer than they ever have been. They've always been very safe, and creates many fewer concerns about nuclear waste, its storage and disposal. And nuclear power is the only carbon-free source of reliable, affordable baseload power. You know, you can have things like wind and you can have solar if you want, but when the wind doesn't blow and the sun doesn't shine or solar panels are covered with snow, you have to have a reliable base of power. That's what things like coal and natural gas provide. It's also what nuclear energy provides. And you're not serious about reducing carbon emissions unless you're serious about increasing nuclear power. I would add, you're not really serious unless you're serious about increasing American natural gas as well. The main reason why carbon emissions have declined in America for 15 years is that we've discovered how to remove tight gas formations from the ground through the combination of hydraulic fracturing and directional drilling, both of which liberal Democrats oppose at almost every turn.
Now, Senator, I want to turn to the headline of the morning. Zawahiri is dead and Americans are happy. But as I said to Brett Baer last night, you can hold two thoughts. The collapse of the American effort in Afghanistan is still a tragedy, and killing Zawahiri is still a good thing. We don't have to give up any critique as we approach the anniversary of that debacle because they got a drone strike in. I want to congratulate American intelligence, American military for executing that plan, and to President Biden for pulling the trigger. He had to okay it. And I'm glad that he did, but it still does not make anything other than obvious. Zawahiri's on a balcony in Kabul. I mean, my God, he wasn't there for 20 years.
Hugh, I think that last point is the key point, and it just proves out what you and I and so many others said a year ago during the Afghanistan fiasco, is that the Taliban had no intention of breaking ties with its terrorist partners. And the fact that head of al-Qaeda felt comfortable and safe just kind of strolling around in downtown Kabul with his family and senior operatives going to and fro indicates exactly what we suggested at the time would happen, has happened, that the Taliban has welcomed al-Qaeda back and is giving them safe haven and support. And it's a really dangerous thing that's happening there.
One member of al-Qaeda, that's justice for everything back to the African embassy bombings up to the present day. but there are more of him standing in line and ready to take over. Senator, I want to talk about Speaker Pelosi, because the White House has been weak here. Speaker Pelosi is going to do the right thing and go to Taiwan. I was afraid for a while she was going to cancel the visit. What do you think of the White House's belated, sort of half-hearted warning that the Chinese should not mess with our leader of our House of Representatives, of which you are an alum?
It is belated and it's half-hearted, and it's another example of Joe Biden's weakness. Look, Speaker Pelosi's trip to Taiwan is perfectly in keeping with 40 years of custom and practice in our relationship with Taiwan. As a general rule of thumb, executive branch officials have not traveled to Taiwan since we established diplomatic relations with Beijing. However, legislators in both chambers and both parties have long traveled there. Xi Jinping knows these things. I was in Taiwan a few years back with a large number of senators on a military aircraft, which, you, as you know, is not a fighter jet or a bomber. It is a commercial airplane that is owned by the military, commercial passenger airplane owned by the military, specifically to transport government officials around. Xi Jinping senses weakness, though, from Joe Biden, and he wants to try to grab everything he can. So he's trying to redefine this part of our status quo relationship with Taiwan. And because if he thinks he can get away with this, he'll just move on to the next thing. That's why it's so important that we not back down. And so disappointing that Joe Biden made it an issue to begin with. Taiwan always beats its chest, always issues threats and condemnations when American legislators travel to China. The difference this time is Joe Biden took the bait. He said that the military didn't want her to go. He leaked her trip. The administration pressured her. He's the one that elevated this into such a tense situation.
Senator, I want to close with Ukraine. I'm asking my listeners to donate to Food for the Poor's Help Ukraine program over at HughHewitt.com, the yellow and blue banner. Reconciliation is an opportunity as well. If it descends into the regular Votorama, to do things like send more HIMARS to Ukraine. Is Joe Biden sending enough to Ukraine?
No, he's not. He never has. He's been caught flat-footed from the very beginning, going back to late last year, continuing to tell Vladimir Putin what we won't do as opposed to just doing what we want to do, and continuing to be a day late on a dollar short in the kinds of weapons we've delivered there. Look, the fighting has largely turned into a stalemate in eastern Ukraine right now because the long-range artillery we've sent there is working. Imagine where we'd be if we'd sent it there 3 months ago when it was clear that the fighting was shifting from northern Ukraine in an effort to take Kyiv into a kind of grinding war of attrition in the east. Russia might not have seen the advances that they've achieved over those last 3 months. We need to back Ukraine to the hilt so they can fight a war to defend their own territory, and we don't have to fight a war to defend NATO territory or other American interests.
Senator Tom Cotton, always a pleasure. Thank you, Senator. Follow him at Twitter at SenTomCotton. Have a great one, Senator. Good luck with Votorama. Welcome back, America. It's Election Day in Missouri, where I hope you vote for Eric Schmidt for Senate. In Michigan, where I hope you vote for Kevin Reinke for Governor, and in Arizona, where I want you to vote for Dawn Grove, who is running for AG, and you need to get up and go out and vote, Arizona. You've got to make your vote count. Go and show up. Dawn Grove, welcome to the Hugh Hewitt Show. How are you?
Hugh, I'm doing fabulous. Wonderful to be with you on this great election day in Arizona. Thank you for having me.
Now, it's early out there, and my show will be taped delayed in a few places across Arizona, and we need people to vote all the way through the finish line. What time do they open? What time do they close?
Oh, I believe 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. This is the day to get out there. Either bring in your early ballot if you received one in the mail, or just show up. But I would not let this right go. Too many people have fought for this over the years, and it matters, and especially matters this year in Arizona.
Now, Dawn Grove, you've got a great attorney general in Mark Brnovich. He's fought in every, argued before the Supreme Court. He's kept Arizona in the SCOTUS game. Are you going to continue to keep Arizona relevant at the national level?
It is very important that Arizona citizens be protected when federal government overreach is taking away their rights and liberties. Our Arizona Constitution literally says that the purpose of government is to protect and maintain individual rights. And when we see what's been happening with federal agencies trampling on citizens' rights, trampling on states' rights, mandating things they have no legal authority for, going way beyond their congressional authority, and taking away people's rights and liberties. It's absolutely essential that the people of Arizona have someone in the Attorney General's office who will push back on that, who will join with other states' attorneys general and make sure that the federal government and agencies don't get away with trampling on citizens' rights and disempowering them.
So, Dawn Grobe, tell people about yourself. You know, I don't do many state races. I do think attorney generals matter a lot. That's why Berno was on the show a lot. It's why I've always backed attorney generals in cases across the United States when they bring them before the Supreme Court. But how do you come to run for AG?
You know, Hugh, I didn't think this would be my path. People asked me many times over the years to run for public office, and I told them all no. I said God would have to completely change my heart to consider campaigning for any political office. But I really have received a calling, and I can't sit back any longer, and especially when I see the ruling class just openly turning citizens into subjects. As a wife and mom, I can't sit back when I see government policies strip away parental rights and mandate masks and isolation that harms our kids and teens. And as a manufacturing executive, an attorney for 31 years, and legal counsel for a thriving family business, I can't sit back when I see the federal government trying to turn private businesses into their enforcement arm to carry out mandates they never had legal authority for. And I'm a patriotic American and a third-generation Arizonan, and I can't sit back when I see the federal government spiraling debt and empowering our enemies and spiking the inflation that hits us at the gas pump and the grocery store and everywhere, all while refusing to do their constitutionally mandated job to guard our border. Tucson had its highest murder rate ever. Violent crime in Phoenix is up 100%, and I feel compelled to restore our safety and the freedoms and opportunities that have meant so much to me and my family in building ping golf in my grandparents' garage, and I want to make sure we preserve these freedoms and opportunities for us and for the next generation.
Now, ping golf is known to everyone. Dawn Grobe is their in-house counsel for many, many years. Dawn, the longest day of the year for media is Election Day, both primary and general. Because we don't know anything until, you know, 2 hours after the polls close. I think it kind of goes by fast for you, right? Are you just doing media click after media click and then out to the polls?
It's been a busy day, all right, and busy things each time. I was very pleased to be interviewed on Glenn Beck and ABC TV 15 and other places. But this is the exciting thing being with you, Hugh, and I am not letting off the gas one bit. Every vote matters, and I really want the people of Arizona to know that I am doing this to serve our people, that I want to make sure that we guard our border and secure our elections and protect people from consumer fraud and make sure that we are keeping our rights and liberties, our constitutional rights and liberties, that they are guarded and protected and that conservatives are not silenced so that we don't lose that next generation of voters who might not even know why we love our country and why our rights and liberties matter.
Last question, Dawn Grobe, the mom question. They want to know that their schools are going to be kept open and masks will be at most optional for students. They want to know that you will fight for them.
Heart and soul. I believe in educational freedom. I believe in the importance of making sure that our children receive the education that they need and the socialization of being around each other. And there's a very important role for the Attorney General to hold school boards accountable to make sure they are following their open meeting laws. They are hearing from parents. They are not doing things behind parents' backs. And absolutely commitment to making sure that we keep our schools open, that our kids don't fall any further behind, and that parents are empowered to make choices for their student. I've done everything as a mom. I have done homeschool, private school, public school, all of that. So it matters. Thank you.
Now, Arizona's got the most education choice in the country. They are the model, and Dawn Grobe will defend it. That's why I've endorsed her, and I hope you will go and vote for Arizona. Get out and go vote for Dawn Grobe, and go vote for Eric Schmidt in Missouri, Kevin Reinke in Michigan, and come back tomorrow, and we'll see if I was right. Coming up next, Mike Gallagher. He can tell you how many pounds he's lost on the SodaWeightLoss.com that Dwayne has embarked upon. Stay tuned, America. Don't forget, help Ukraine over at ChooseUS.com. The banner's up there on top. You cannot miss it, even if you're a Steelers fan. I'll talk to you tomorrow on the next Choose US Show.
Choose. three-star general, Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.